I'd like to thank the organizers for having this conference. It's been really good. Okay, so I'm going to talk about molecular dynamics, which is when people simulate materials or small physical systems at the microscopic level, typically just using Newton's laws and solving it with a numerical integrator. And I wanted to analyze molecular dynamics rigorously. And there were some problems that I encountered with using the concept of ergodicity as it's usually used by mathematicians. So I'm going to talk about what's wrong with ergodicity, how to weaken ergodicity so that you can do some more practical analysis, and then I'll talk about how I could get make some progress with my project doing that. So typically in molecular dynamics, sort of the basic situation is that we have a bunch of atoms and molecules, and they each have a position and a momentum, and we write down a set of equations that's just Newton's laws. So it's a Hamiltonian system of differential equations. So sometimes people do more complicated things. They'll add noise, or they'll connect it to a thermostat. But the simplest situation is you have a Hamiltonian system. So I'm only considering ODEs here. So you can write it down like this. So there's, you know, two forms. You have the P and Q form, and this is probably the most common form. And then this form, just sort of the Newton's law of acceleration, is proportional to force. So the properties that this has have is that energy is conserved, and also the volume, so phase-space volume is conserved, and that's a consequence of the symplectic structure being preserved. So, but for us, the only thing, the symplectic structure isn't important in my discussion. It's only the volume conservation that matters. So people will pick an initial condition for this system of Hamiltonian ordinary differential equations, and they'll pick some function of the state of the system. So here you've got some function g that depends on the vector of positions and momenta. And what researchers will do is they'll take a really long integration. So they'll integrate the system over a long time with a numerical method. And then they'll look at the average of that function over a trajectory. So depending on the function, you can infer all sorts of things about the physical system. Like, you can infer viscosity, and people are interested in how often reactions occur, lots of things. So of course people don't actually have real trajectories of these systems. They only have numerical trajectories. And so, not one that I'm going to tackle, but yeah, that's an issue. But that's the interesting thing, is that you don't, for viscosity is a good example, that you don't actually have to observe there's a subtle physical way of getting viscosity that isn't as obvious. You don't actually measure it. You observe a correlation function that turns out to give you viscosity. No. Okay. It's interesting though. So we have our differential equations give us a flow, but when we do the simulation, we have a map. So throughout, I'm gonna call the map S delta T. The delta T is saying that we're replacing the flow with a map of a step length of delta T. And it's meant to approximate the flow of the differential equation. So the most outstandingly successful numerical integrator for these problems is called Sturmer-Verlet. And it was actually, it seems that Newton himself, Isaac Newton, used something like Sturmer-Verlet in Principia in some part. So it's sometimes called Sturmer-Verlet-Newton. But anyways, it's amazingly successful. And if you just have this equation here, the simplest thing you could do to numerically discretize this would be to replace this second difference with this discretized central difference. And that's it. That's all you do. And there's a version that you can write of this in P and Q as well. So what people use this method, it's not high order or anything like that, and they integrate over very long times, and they get excellent results. So recall that what the researchers, what they really want is they want the limit of this integral, and instead they compute the average over these computed values. So these systems are chaotic, usually, and so you're not going to see good trajectory-wise agreement. So the real system does this, the numerical system is going to agree for a short period of time, and then it diverges. So you can ask, so how is it that if I'm not computing trajectories of the system, really, I'm computing something entirely different. How could it be that these long time averages are accurate? So my goal is to explain why this is possible and which methods do it best. So, or probably a better way of putting it is, why is Sturm-Verlet so extraordinarily good when it's so simple? Okay, so yeah, it could be bad. It could be, but that will turn out to be true, I think. Okay, so in particular, so for many of these systems that people simulate, they're assumed to be ergodic. So ergodic, so this is the full mathematical definition, but so we have some state space I'm calling sigma, and there's a measure mu on it, and the measure mu is invariant under some flow s of t. And now when we assume that it's ergodic, if we have our function g, and then we take this long time average of the function g applied to the trajectory, it's ergodic if that's equal to just if I just take the average of the function over the entire state space. And I'm going to use these notations, these angle brackets and this little bar, to indicate that. So that's the definition of ergodicity. And it doesn't have to hold for every single u. So it could be that there's one initial value u that's funny. But if it's on a set of measures zero, then we say that that's an ergodic flow. And it has to be, the part of the definition is it has to be for all L1 functions g. So, and for Hamiltonian systems, you might be thinking, oh, well, energy is always conserved. It can't sample all of phase space. But usually you assume that you're looking at things on an energy level set. And then mu, you get mu immediately, whatever your Hamiltonian is, because of the volume conservation property. And then ST, our flow, is just given by the Hamiltonian differential equations. So that's the setup, and this is the assumption that people make about a lot of Hamiltonian systems. So if an example of that is that if I have a box, and I have all these little particles in there, and there's enough energy that the particles are moving around rapidly. So if I claim that this system is ergodic, what I'm saying is that from almost any initial condition I start with, I'm going to sample all possible configurations of this system. So suppose I wonder, okay, is there going to be a time when this particle here is right here and this particle there is over there, for example? So if the system is ergodic, I'm saying, yes, there will eventually, if I sample long enough, there'll be a time when that event happens. And so it seems, and I think it's fairly intuitive. You're like, well, you have a feel for what the system's going to do. It's going to mix up. The particles are going to interact. It's hard to imagine why those two particles wouldn't eventually end up there. So it's hard. Yes. Yes, go for it. Ah, yes. Yes, that's why they have the energy surface, Rick.
Right.
So this correcting the signs. Okay.
And now I want to have a little tiny little thing about this.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Go ahead. Yes, and.
You need another level beforehand.
No, it's and. Because your state space, you're not, ergodicity isn't a property of a single particle. It's a property of the whole.
It's a property of the space-based property. So we'll talk about it later.
Okay. So, if you have ergodicity, then you would have that, if the system is ergodic, this ergodic average is equal to the state space average. And if the numerical method is ergodic, say the numerical method has some invariant space sigma tilde and some invariant measure mu tilde. It doesn't usually, but say it did, then the numerical method would be ergodic, and that means that for almost all initial conditions, this limit of this average would be equal to this ensemble average. So if I knew that, if I had ergodicity of the method, and I knew that this state space was approximately equal to this, and this invariant measure was approximately equal to that invariant measure, as delta t went to zero, say, then I would know that these two averages would have to be the same in the limit as delta t goes to zero. That would be great. So that would be a very, I mean, you'd have the details to fill in, but it wouldn't be a difficult issue. So there is a big problem with saying if I have an ergodic Hamiltonian system and I apply a numerical method to it, then the numerical method will also be ergodic. So the big problem is that almost no Hamiltonian systems have shown to be ergodic. So the Hamiltonian systems, so starting, I think it's Sinai, is the first rigorous proof of ergodicity for a Hamiltonian system. And it's a billiard system. And so billiard systems are Hamiltonian systems, but they're not described by the flow of differential equations. So they're somewhat unsuitable for my investigation, because I'm interested in integrators. So some people have proven, so Donnet and Liverani, they've proven an example of a smooth Hamiltonian system that's ergodic, but it's very, very special. And there's another special example that's been proven since then. And so even for these billiard systems, the proofs are really technical and awful. They're really hard. I mean, it's not clear. As a numerical analyst, I didn't want to get into trying to generalize those proofs to the numerical situation. So, but what's even worse is that if you take a small perturbation of a Hamiltonian system that's ergodic, that, in general, violates the ergodicity. So this was proven, Marcus and Mayer proved this, that generic Hamiltonian systems are not ergodic. So you can find small perturbations that break the ergodicity. And Donnet and Tureyev and Ramkadar have taken some of the examples that Sinai gave of ergodic billiards, and they've made the billiards sort of softened so that the walls, instead of being rigid, are a bit squishy. And they've shown that you don't get ergodicity. And quite interestingly, Liverani has said that the system that I showed earlier with the balls in the box, it turns out that for high enough energy, that you can show that system is not ergodic. And that's because if you had, I don't understand the argument rigorously, but if you had infinite energy, the system would be integrable. So if you step back from infinite energy a little bit, it's just a perturbation of an integrable system. And then by CAM theory, you can show that there's invariant tori. So just pictorially, here's an example of this. So Sinai showed that, say I have this periodic domain, and I have this circular scatterer, and I have this little point particle, and it pings around this domain. And if I look at that, is ergodic. So he proves that that's ergodic. Now Donnet in 96 showed that if I make this a little soft, no matter how hard I make it, if I make it a little bit soft, there's going to be a trajectory like this, the periodic trajectory, and in the neighborhood of that trajectory, it's a neutrally stable periodic trajectory. So you can have, if you put a little ball of phase-space volume there and allow it to travel around on there, it'll stay there forever. So there's an invariant set of positive measure. So this violates ergodicity. So the moral that I take from this is that ergodicity is not a good concept for practical purposes. So I found in this very old book, well, not that old, 1949, by Kinchin. It seems it's a Dover book, costs $12. And he discusses this problem about ergodicity being so intractable. And so what he observes is that many times when we have a particular G, it's nearly a particular function G that we're interested in, it's nearly constant for almost all the states in our system. So here's an example. Suppose I have this particles in a box, and G of U is going to be, U is the state of the system, and G of U is the number of particles on the right divided by the total number of particles. So you can think if I pick a state with a right energy at random, that this is you know, by law of large numbers, is going to, I mean, more or less, is going to be about half for almost all G, for almost all U, rather. So he asks, well, what can, in this situation, if we have a function like this, what can we say about its ergodic properties? So Kingshin shows that if we have a function G that's approximately equal to its average over the whole state space, we can write that as saying that if I take the absolute value of the function minus its average, take the absolute value of that, and take the ensemble average, I get some very small number delta. So if that's true, then you can infer that ergodic averages with respect to that function are also very near the average value of the function. And so you get that this ergodic average limit subtracted away from... if this system were truly ergodic, this would be zero. But it's not ergodic. It's close to ergodic because you get that this is going to be small. So in the cases where you know that this is small, then you're going to have that this system is nearly ergodic. So this is nice, but it's not general enough. So there's lots of functions that are not nearly constant over the entire state space, and we still want to say things about them. So an example is that suppose I have one particle that's black among all the green particles. And if my function g of u is going to be 1 if the black particle is on the right, and it's going to be 0 otherwise. Now, if I let this system run, we expect that this particle will spend about half the time here, half the time here. So the average of the function g is 1/2. But it's not the case that g is approximately equal to 1/2. It's actually always at least half away from 1/2. So it's not, the argument isn't sufficient to cover the all the cases that we're interested in. But we can abstract away from this argument. We can abstract away from this argument a weakened version of ergodicity. So recall that the original definition of ergodicity, the traditional mathematical one, is that for all functions g and almost all initial conditions, we want that this limit is that, is the ensemble average. Now, if you rearrange things a little bit, you get as a consequence that the difference between this average and the difference between the limit and the average, if we take the absolute value of that and then take the average of that over the entire ensemble, that gives us zero. So that's another way of putting it. And then what Kingshin concludes in his example is that for a particular g, we're no longer asking this to hold true for all g, just this particular g that we're interested in, there's some small delta such that this quantity here is going to be less than delta. So what this says is that for most of the phase space, my ergodic average depends on where I start my trajectory at. And it says that for most of the state space, if I compute an ergodic average at that point, it's going to be close to the ensemble average. And there can be some parts of phase space where it's far off, but those parts have to be small. So you sort of weaken it in two ways. And you're also saying it's only for certain functions g. So I'm going to formalize this as a definition, that we say that ST, the flow, is delta ergodic with respect to g if this holds true, this property. And it has these three, it weakens the normal concept of ergodicity in three different ways. So the most important thing, I think, is that you can say something about what happens with ergodic systems when you perturb them. So the problem that I had was that if I have an ergodic flow and I apply a numerical method, I'm at the very least, you know, perturbing it. And so I can't say that it's ergodic, I need to be able to say something about it. So here's sort of the simplest case of a theorem that lets you do that. You say that, okay, say my G is Lipschitz, so already I'm restricting the class of functions I'm looking at, and I'm saying that ST is measure-preserving, it's delta-ergodic with respect to some G. So say my original flow S of T is close to being ergodic. And now if I look at, say I have a perturbed flow with a perturbation parameter gamma, so that when gamma goes to zero, on finite time intervals, my perturbed flow converges to my original flow. So then it happens that if I pick a small enough, for any epsilon, if I pick a small enough gamma, so if I make the perturbation small enough, I'm going to have that this perturbed flow, this should be gamma. The perturbed flow also has this approximate ergodicity property with the same function but with a slightly bigger constant. So in particular, if I have an ergodic flow, if I make a sufficiently small perturbation, I'm not going to be able to notice in an average sense, I'm not going to be able to notice the difference in terms of ergodic properties. So it's sort of the catch here is that I'm assuming that my perturbed flow has the same state space and the same invariant measure. So one kind of hypothetical example but of interest to me where this is sort of true is that suppose I have a Hamiltonian system and I apply a numerical integrator to it. And say the numerical integrator has these two properties. Say that it conserves energy, so that's a property that you can construct numerical integrators to have. And say that it conserves phase space volume. So if I asked or required that it was symplectic, that would be too much to hope for. But say it conserves energy and phase space volume. So then that means that it conserves energy, so it has the same state space. And it conserves volume, so it has the same invariant measure. And so what I have is another dynamical system that has the same state space invariant measure. And so if my original flow is weakly ergodic, then if I make a small enough time step, so it has to be a convergent numerical method, but if I make a small enough time step delta t, then I'm going to have that this numerical method is ergodic in this weakened sense as well, with a little bit bigger parameter. So what this allows is that we can get rid of the assumption of ergodicity on S delta T. So if I have a method, the short moral is that I don't have to worry about my numerical method breaking the ergodicity of the system. So I just have to worry about preserving energy and state space volume. So I have to point out though that the time step delta T that this argument gives you that you can take is really, really small. So no one actually integrates with time steps this small. And it's because the proof of the theorem about the perturbations is quite crude. Like it doesn't uses very little. So I mean, just briefly, you look at the system over time steps t, intervals of time t, where you sample the state space quite thoroughly. And then you choose a delta t small enough so that your numerical method agrees with the system trajectory-wise over that entire system, over that entire interval. And then you use the invariance of the measure of the numerical method that gives you this for infinite times. So I reduce the problem of long time averages from infinite times to finite times, but still very long finite times. So you get a delta t that goes like the epsilon like this. So it's pretty horrible, but I mean, right now I'm working on trying to. I think you can't do better without making more assumptions about the system. So I'm trying to find what kind of assumptions are good. Okay, but let's just forget about numerics for a minute. So if you have a Hamiltonian system and we have our state space, which is the energy level set, we have an invariant measure on it. Now, if I perturb the Hamiltonian function, I get a different energy level set and a slightly different invariant measure on it. And so that does not fit into the case of the theorem that I talked about before because we're shifting those two things. But it turns out that it's okay. It's not hard at all to show that. So if you have a Hamiltonian system that's on this energy level surface and say it's ergodic on that energy level surface, if I perturb it a little bit, I get something that's delta ergodic. Again, the smallness of the perturbation is way smaller than you would like, but it's not a fundamental difficulty. Okay, so of course, in real molecular dynamics, the issue was the Sturmer-Verle method. So it has the property, so Sturmer-Verle is a symplectic method, so it conserves volume, so that's good. And however, it does not conserve energy exactly. But it has this property that Brian Moore mentioned yesterday that if you integrate over very long times, the energy will stay within a narrow band of the original energy. So it turns out that it's not so crucial that the energy is maintained exactly. You can show that if the energy is within this banded region, that you get a slightly weaker result, but morally it's the same situation. That all you need to have this long-term energy, long-term averages computed well, is the phase space volume conservation and just some approximate energy. So I think that explains why symplectic methods, in particular Sturmer-Verlet, are so effective. And I have examples where if you approximately conserve phase space volume and exactly conserve energy, then you don't get good properties. So it's more important to preserve phase space volume than energy for these types of computations. So in terms of my original goal to explain MD simulations, there's one situation that I think is pretty well done, and that's the situation where you have the functions that Kinchin originally considers, where you can call it an equilibrium situation, where the function is nearly constant over the entire state space. And in those cases, you don't need these long time intervals in order to get good sampling. So in that case, the argument's pretty clear. It's pretty straightforward to see that you're going to get good behavior with your numerical integrator. For the case of non-equilibrium functions, which is much more challenging, the step size requirements that I provide are much too small, but at least they're not zero. So there's some progress here, and I'm working on trying to make it work for more realistic step lengths. Okay, thank you.